TED Audio Collective.
This TED Talk features education innovator Alvin Irby, recorded live at TED Residency 2017.
Let's talk retirement for a sec. To me, it feels like it's getting harder for people to reach their goals for the future. We hear about inflation, rate hikes, the changing market. Are we even saving enough? And things keep changing. Here's where Fidelity comes in. Whether you're saving for retirement or close to living in it, Fidelity can help you get where you want to go, no matter your path or what happens along the way. How? Well, they'll help you create a free personalized plan that adapts as your priorities change. They'll also show you what's called timely insights, small tips on ways to save and invest to help meet your goals. And you can monitor your plan so you can stay on target. The future's coming, and so is retirement. Get ready to take it on at fidelity.com/takeon. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services member NYSC SIPC.
Support for TED Talks Daily comes from Talking Transitions, a new podcast series brought to you by the EY Organization and Foresight Climate and Energy. Talking Transitions looks at how the shift to a decarbonized economy holds within it several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines, and the effects on three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts or visit talkingtransitions.com. to find out more.
As an elementary school teacher, my mom did everything she could to ensure I had good reading skills. This usually consisted of weekend reading lessons at our kitchen table while my friends played outside. My reading ability improved, but these forced reading lessons didn't exactly inspire a love of reading. High school changed everything. In 10th grade, my regular English class read short stories and its spelling tests. Out of sheer boredom, I asked to be switched into another class. The next semester, I joined Advanced English. We read two novels and wrote two book reports that semester. The drastic difference in rigor between these two English classes angered me and spurred questions like, where did all these white people come from? My high school was over 70% Black and Latino, but this advanced English class had white students everywhere. This personal encounter with institutionalized racism altered my relationship with reading forever. I learned that I couldn't depend on a school, a teacher, or a curriculum to teach me what I needed to know. And more out of like rebellion than being intellectual, I decided I would no longer allow other people to dictate when and what I read. And without realizing it, I'd stumbled upon a key to helping children read: identity. Instead of fixating on skills and moving students from one reading level to another, or forcing struggling readers to memorize lists of unfamiliar words, we should be asking ourselves this question: how can we inspire children to identify as readers? Deshaun, a brilliant first grader I taught in the Bronx, he helped me understand how identity shapes learning. One day during math, walk up to Deshaun and I say, "Deshaun, you're a great mathematician." He looks at me and responds, "I'm not a mathematician, I'm a math genius." Okay, Deshaun, right? Reading, completely different story. "Mr. Irby, I can't read. I'm never gonna learn to read," he would say. I taught Deshaun to read, but there are countless Black boys who remain trapped in illiteracy. According to the U.S. Department of Education, more than 85% of Black male fourth graders are not proficient in reading. 85%. The more challenges to reading children face, the more culturally competent educators need to be. Moonlighting as a stand-up comedian for the past 8 years, I understand the importance of cultural competency, which I define as the ability to translate what you want someone else to know or be able to do into communication or experiences that they find relevant and engaging. Before going on stage, I assess an audience. Are they white? Are they Latino? Are they old, young, professional, conservative? Then I curate and modify my jokes based on what I think will generate the most laughter. While performing in a church, I could tell bar jokes, but that might not result in laughter. As a society, we're creating reading experiences for children that are the equivalent of telling bar jokes in a church. And then we wonder why so many children don't read. Educator and philosopher Paulo Freire believed that teaching and learning should be two-way. Students shouldn't be viewed as empty buckets to be filled with facts, but as co-creators of knowledge. Cookie-cutter curriculums and school policies that require students to sit statue still or to work in complete silence, these environments often exclude the individual learning needs, the interests, and the expertise of children, especially Black boys. Many of the children's books promoted to Black boys focus on serious topics like slavery, civil rights, and biographies. Less than 2% of teachers in the United States are Black males, and a majority of Black boys are raised by single mothers. There are literally young Black boys who have never seen a Black man reading or never had a Black man encourage him to read. What cultural factors, what social cues are present that would lead a young Black boy to conclude that reading is even something he should do? This is why I created Barbershop Books. It's a literacy nonprofit that creates child-friendly reading spaces in barbershops. The mission is simple: to help young Black boys identify as readers. Lots of Black boys go to the barbershop once or twice a month. Some see their barbers more than they see their fathers. Barbershop Books connects reading to a male-centered space and involves Black men and boys' early reading experiences. This identity-based reading program uses a curated list of children's books recommended by Black boys. These are the books that they actually want to read. Scholastic's 2016 Kids and Family Report found that the number one thing children look for when choosing a book is a book that will make them laugh. So if we're serious about helping Black boys and other children to read when it's not required, we need to incorporate relevant male reading models into early literacy and exchange some of the children's books that adults love so much for funny, silly, or even gross books like Gross Greg. You call them boogers. Greg calls them delicious little sugars. That laugh, that positive reaction, or gross reaction some of you just had, Black boys deserve and desperately need more of that. Dismantling the savage inequalities that plague American education requires us to create reading experiences that inspire all children to say three words: I'm a reader. Thank you.
For more TED Talks, go to TED.com.